This is that other sports shit. Let's go.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back. It's another day that we get to record the pod and talk sports, a little bit of shit talk, a little bit of praising people here and there. We generally try to keep things light and positive, but you know, with sports, it's hard not to shit talk on some people because some people do really stupid things or some people are just really, really bad at their sport. And so we got to call it how it is. It is Monday, the 10th of July. We are now about a week past July 4th weekend. I hope everybody was safe. I hope you have all your digits. I hope you have all your eyelids and eyelashes and stuff still attached to your face. No one got burnt up. Hope everybody was safe and enjoyed a happy, fun holiday weekend. You are joined today, as always, by myself, Jesse Thomas, and by my man, holding down Fresno, California, all by his damn self, Mr. Jason Valdez.
What's up, y'all? Let's get it in early and often. Shout out to all of our people that support us. Variety Sports, Fat Boy Fadeaway Sports, Big Brian Black. Shout out Big Bri. Shout out Bora Wallen. Shout out the great Justin Von Doom. And we definitely got to shout out Chris W. Powers. On 4th of July, we were in the chat, the old Team Toss chat that's been around for several years. The old school listeners, they remember Chris. Chris is doing well. Double L's doing well. So we were just doing a little bit of, sharing of the family photos and stuff like that. So let me make sure that we shout out Chris. We love you. We love seeing you doing well and the family doing well. Everyone looking great, beautiful. Healthy, all that great shit. Who am I missing here in the shout outs, Jeff?
Let's shout out Smash Squad MMA. Thank you, brother.
Yes.
Holding down Florida.
Holding down
to Florida. Keeps trying to get me to move out there. I'm telling you, he's doing everything in his power. He's like, hell, man, just come out and like visit. Like, I'll make you stay. Florida's wonderful. It's awesome. I can't do it because politically, like, I just can't. I can't handle that. And it's too damn humid. It's too damn humid there. But Smash Squad MMA, we love you, man. Thank you for all the retweets and all the verbal back and forth we do on Twitter. It's awesome.
As someone who was just in Jacksonville and Orlando in the past few months, I can confirm it is humid. It is also very beautiful. So
yes,
maybe you just make your way out there for like 4 or 5 days. It's tough because when you're flying from the West Coast to the East Coast, you have to basically accumulate a full day that you are in an airport. So sometimes two, if you really want to make it about like a calendar day, unless you're flying out like in the nighttime, which I never do. You're usually taking a day to fly over there, right? You got to jump usually two planes from Oregon to maybe Texas, or I don't know which way they would send you, which route they would send you before you get to Florida. We should look into that. But then you got to come back.
To yes. Fucking Texas where it's hot as fuck. And then I got to fly out to Florida where it's hot as fuck.
You're in that Dallas-Fort Worth airport, which has a beautiful Dallas Cowboys merch store, but also is fucking giant. Like, you're taking subways and shit to get from one portion of the airport to the other. It's fucking giant. So,
as long as they way to drive my big ass up and down, I'm good.
Not the biggest fan of having to fucking hop plane to plane. It would be nice. Maybe it's a little bit more dough if you could just hop on one straight. It's probably like, what, a 5-hour flight or 6-hour flight out there or something like that.
Can't be that bad. I was just in Vegas. Vegas is hot. Don't get me
wrong.
Did
you fly?
Vegas
or did you drive?
No, I flew. I don't drive nowhere anymore except back and forth to work. I learned my lesson years ago in my youth. Some buddies of mine, we decided we're going to take this road trip from Oregon to Las Vegas. And that was a mistake, brother.
How many hours?
It was like, I don't know, like 8 hours, something like that. Plus, we got stuck in LA traffic because we ended up somewhere down that way. We went through the grapevine. They call it the grapevine.
Oh, nice. Yeah, you're going to the 99. You're coming my way, buddy.
Oh, my Lord in heaven. Then we hit some California traffic, and that's, I was stuck. We were stuck in traffic from like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We didn't hit our exit till like 7. Like, it was bad. It was bad, bro.
Hey, let me say this. Shout out to people that are familiar with the grapevine. The grapevine has changed so much in the past, like 5 to 10 years, where it's like, oh, they stuck a hotel dead in the middle of the grapevine. So if your car does break down, you won't die. You've just got to spend hundreds, possibly thousands of dollars to get the fuck out of here.
That's sort of a positive, I guess. Now, at least you don't die.
Dude, now the grapevine is like opened up with like auto shops and like restaurants and like hotels. And it's like, I don't know who does it, because if you're in the grapevine, you might as well just fucking ride it out, ride the hour and a half out and just get to fucking LA. But they've really souped it up. But I have more of the pessimistic mentality where I'm like, if you're stopping in the grapevine, it better be to take a piss or to take a shit. Otherwise, you're there for the worst reasons. You're there because your car's fucking overheating. You're there because someone's having some type of medical fucking emergency and you got to pull over. Like, there is no reason to fucking pull over or stop in the grapevine. And I mean fucking none. Like, get your food in Bakersfield. Get your fucking snacks in Bakersfield. There's no reason. Once you see those hills, you should just be fucking locking in and strapping in. We're driving straight forward for an hour and a fucking half, and the next destination is L.A. We're seeing fucking L.A., big city of dreams. That's it.
It was literally my first time seeing motorcycles just zigzagging through traffic in between cars.
Because it's
I've
like
never
six
seen
lanes.
It before.
Because the grapevine is like six lanes. So if you've never, if you're, I hate to say a hick from the sticks, but if you're someone right now listening and you're like in the middle of Tennessee – and you've never seen a freeway with more than like three lanes, double that. Cause that's what the grapevine can
be. It's insane.
Six fucking lanes going north and south. And it could still be stacked to the fucking gills or backed up because for some reason it snows there, which is, I could go because there's hills, right?
I guess.
Fucking snows there. So yeah, gotta be careful. I will be going down the grapevine in September because I will be in L.A. for Disneyland. So I'll be out there with
nice.
The kids. I'll be at the beach. I'll be tanning. And then I've decided, Jess, I haven't brought this up on the air yet, but might as well bring it up. I think I'm going to be trying to shoot your way end of September or October. I don't think the weather will be great, but I think we're going to be trying to figure out another live show, you and I.
Just make sure to bring a lot of hoodies because it's going to be cold as shit. And it's going to be wet. It's going to be raining.
I still got to get the fuck out of here, though. So we'll figure it out. I just don't know. We'll figure it out. Okay, Jess, there was the UFC this past weekend. Did we hit all the shout-outs?
Yeah, I think so. And never mind my landscaper. My landscaper's in the background. He's doing shit. So
I don't hear anything. That's drying towels in the background. If you can hear that, apologies. But yeah, I don't hear anything. We're good.
So this last weekend, this last weekend, we had what I consider to have been probably the best UFC card of the year so far.
I feel like it's going to be
very hard to top. Not just in view of like, I think I saw there was 9 finishes. From top to bottom, there's 9 finishes. Insane. Subs. TKOs, KOs, not just that, but the fact that there were some incredible fights. Fights that just you watch them and you're like, damn, I got to go back and watch that again. Damn, that was a good fight. I got to go back and watch it again. There were those type of fights on this card. It's going to be very hard to top.
You know, the best part of it is I absolutely missed all of the prelims. I started watching the early prelims, the pre-prelims, if you will. And then I had that moment, Jess, where I'd come back from a Chuck E. Cheese party and I had had so many fucking carbs that I thought, if I'm going to nap before shit gets really good, because you got Collision on at 5 o'clock, which is going to have CM Punk versus Samoa Joe. And then you've got the pay-per-view at 7, West Coast time, of course. So I got to take a quick snooze here. I've got to jump into Collision and then be able to jump right into the pay-per-view. So I missed pretty much everything after the first or second fight, which I believe both were knockouts or submissions. They were quick. They were fucking quick fights. And got up, missed all of the 5 o'clock stuff, missed the Lawler fight. I did not see the Lawler fight in its entirety. I mean, not that it's that long, but in its entirety until the following morning.
God bless Robbie Lawler, who instills.
Can we start there?
Faith in me.
Can we start there?
We should. Let's go ahead and start with Robbie Lawler. You're talking about a dude who's got over 30 fights, stemming from Elite XC to he had a couple fights in Pride. He had some like drug issues and stuff for a minute or something. I believe it was drugs and alcohol.
I think it might have been a little of that.
He came in having a big belly in a couple fights, and he grew his hair out kind of weird, and like he was just like fuck everything. And then all of a sudden, like I don't know what happened, but someone grabbed a hold of that man and said, "Kid, you are too damn talented to be living your life like this. You got to shape up or ship out." And that he did. He shaped up, man. He went in, like he won Strikeforce middle. He then comes over to the UFC. He becomes the UFC middleweight champion, knocking fools out, just crazy Robbie Lawler style. And so let's start with Robbie Lawler versus who did he fight? Nico Price.
Yeah,
Tell me your thoughts. Very easy
to figure out here. Price made the mistake of going, "I'm going to get right in the pocket and bang with Lawler." And he was on the wrong end of a bad exchange. That was really it. Whatever his game plan was, it did not work. If your game plan is, I'm going to bite down on my mouthpiece and I'm going to just exchange hooks and uppercuts with Robbie Lawler and see how that ends. I understand he's a little bit older in the tooth. And I understand maybe you think this might be your best chance to win. So maybe that was the game plan. Styles make fights. But, he went out there and got knocked out in 1 minute. It's really all I can say.
It was vintage. It was truly vintage Lawler. Lawler got into a little scuffle there in the first few seconds. Came out firing, thought he would throw off a couple bombs. He didn't land any of them, I don't believe. Maybe a couple glancing shots. Robbie threw very technical strikes to set up those vicious uppercuts. And then that big-ass left hand out of the exchange of the uppercuts is the one that laid Nico out. It was vintage Lawler. And then you saw the emotions after the fight because he knew it was over. And you think a lot of people, like, this is where it hit me, right? Because you and I have watched mixed martial arts for a long time.
Yeah.
But it's sad to see, like, when an NFL guy that we grew up with retires. Kind of like it hits. It hits you as a fan. An NBA guy retires, it hits you as a fan. And then, but when guys retire from MMA, I'm like, I don't know why it doesn't hit me that hard. But for whatever reason, seeing the emotion coming, just overflowing from Robbie Lawler, it hit me. And it made me realize, like, these are fucking human beings who have been in a professional sport where they fight in a cage for money for years and years and years and years. And this man's calling it quits. And it just hit me how much the sport meant to him. And it showed in that cage that night. It showed how much the fans meant to him, the sport of mixed martial arts, the ethics that it brings to you, you know, the hard work and the training, and just it all meant so much to that man. And culminate in that type of win to go out, it was amazing.
I think that I got a few different thoughts here, but I want to start here. When you watch him, that I think it was a fan shot video, if you will, of him walking up the ramp or walking back to the stage where he's going back and the fight's over and he's looking back at the crowd one last time. And I don't think you really get that from fighters a lot, or maybe you do and we just never see it, where they turn around and have that moment of just kind of absorbing everything. And you can see he had that moment of stopping and looking around, and he was just kind of looking at the crowd and looking at the cage and just kind of soaking it all up. That to me was the moment I thought that was badass, and also a great photograph, if you will, a portrait, if you will, of that's how you want a guy's career to end. Because unfortunately, Jess, and here's my next point, there's a reason we don't feel this the way we do with fighters, the same way we do like some football players or basketball players. Because father time is a motherfucker on all ends and all yeah. sports. But in combat sports, it's usually they're getting fucking wheeled out, or we're frustrated because we're like, we wish that guy would have retired 2-3 fights ago, and now look at the way they went out. Man, that guy shouldn't have taken that one last fight, and look at the way he went out. And you know, we're not really celebrating them as much as we're just like, well, we can't. We said, you know, we said this would happen, and here we are. So it's a little bit of a different, I guess you can say, just there's differences with the retirements here, right? You're usually getting pushed out of the cage. I guess you're getting pushed out of the league too, depending on who you are. But I looked at Jose Aldo and Jens Pulver retiring and getting their Hall of Fame stuff over the past weekend, and seeing how emotional those dudes got. And seeing how emotional Aldo got. And I don't, maybe it happened and I just don't remember, but I don't remember them dudes having that moment where they took their gloves off and went, so this is fucking it. And I'm putting my gloves in the middle because this is it. This is my true moment. Like, I'm, a lot of fighters probably do not get that fucking moment for whatever reasoning, right? A lot of fighters probably aren't ending their careers in the UFC. And here is my final thought on this, Jess, and then we'll keep it moving. I didn't see Robbie take his gloves off and put him in the middle of the ring. Now, maybe he thinks that's lame. Maybe he's like, man, y'all corny with that shit. I'm not doing that. or maybe he's like, man, I got another fight in me. I got another fight or two in me. But I'm not going to say that right now. I'm going to do the gracious thing. It's fight week. I'm not going to make it about myself. He's never really been that type of cat to make it about himself, right? If you think about it.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll get that 60, 90 days from now, 100, you know, 4 or 5 months out, we'll get that. Hey, there's the whispers, right? Hey, Lawler's looking at fighting in Japan. Lawler's looking at fighting in PFL. Lawler's looking at this. Would it surprise you, Jeff?
I think that Robbie Lawler is of the old school. And some of these newer generational athletes, they tend to focus on their training so much that when their career does come to an end, they always feel like they have another fight or two left. I think that Robbie Lawler, he's evolved. He's evolved from that guy who didn't really care about training. He just focused on the fact that he could knock you out with one punch. He didn't really had to go five rounds ever. He evolved from that guy, just a brawler, to an actual mixed martial artist over his time as he got older. And that's when he actually entered his real prime, won championships, and made a real name for himself. I would like to think that this Robbie Lawler, the emotions that came out, truly meant that this was his last fight. I don't want to sit here and speculate, like, can he come back? Should he come back? What I will say is this. Robbie Lawler probably does have another fight or two, but realistically, is he going to all he's going to end up fighting is another guy like Nico Price. And one of those two fights, or maybe his next fight, he gets fucked up and loses, and then what happens? I think that he is a smart enough man at this time in his life, at his age, with all the fights and accolades that he has behind him, to truly be done with the sport. Will it hurt? Hell yes. It hurts every athlete when they call it quits and they hang up the gloves, when they hang up the cleats, when they hang up the, you know, the jersey. It hurts like hell because that's blood, sweat, and tears that you put, you know, 10, 15, 20 years into. But I believe that this is the last time we'll see Robbie Lawler fighting anywhere.
Give me your natural reaction number 1 to 10. How surprised would you be if they announced bare knuckle fight Lawler versus Masvidal? You got a number, you just don't want to say it.
I'm going to say 3.
That's low. Holy shit. I thought you were going to say like 7. Okay.
No, I'm going to say 3.
Let's go with this main card. I was in love with this card. It was fun. We had some, we were excited for Bo Nickal versus Val Woodburn. You know what I love is this video of Val Woodburn on the tractor. Did you see this video of him on the, he's like on a fucking John Deere mower. Did you see any of this?
I have not seen this video.
The UFC made it a point to put this video out where they're like, 7 days ago, my man was mowing lawns because this is what he does for a living. And 5 days later, he's in here. He took this fucking fight with Nicole. You had some really hot takes on this fucking fight on Twitter with Bo. And I want to go there. Trust me, because you and I are in a little bit of disagreements here. But let's start here with the fight. I don't think a lot of time needs to be spent on the fight. What'd you think?
No. I think the fight went the way that it should have gone. I honestly thought that Nicole was going to take him down and submit him. That's I believe both you and I said submission somewhere in the second round or something like that. I think you even said the first round. To see him pop gloves like that was absolutely amazing and super. But I felt that the reason he was able to do that is because he was literally fighting a guy who the guy was undefeated. I believe that Val Woodburn was undefeated up until that point. But, you know, you got to take competition into mind when you're talking about stuff like that. Bo's not exactly fought the best of the best, but he's been training with the best of the best. And he's been with the UFC for a minute or two now. And so I think that he just figured that, hey, now's the chance to have some pop in my glove. And man, he teed off on Val. My man Val Venus got fucked up. But you know what? Here's the thing though. Val Woodburn. You like that? So Val took a shot, and here's the thing. You said it on the last show. You said kid takes a shot. If he loses, it's a win-win no matter what. He doesn't lose. Because yeah, he got messed up real quick. But you know what? Maybe he is in a White's contender series, you know, like next year or something because of this, you know. Dana White has been thought to take care of his fighters, but he does take care of fighters to a certain extent. And I'd like to think that there was something in Val's contract that said, hey man, win or lose, you know, we'll either give you another shot on an undercard, or, you know, you'll pay, hey man, we got a contender series coming up in September. How about you pop on that show and see what you got? Going to be the last we see of Val Woodburn.
I agree. It seemed to me like Bo stung him and from his initial punch that he threw, from his initial 1-2 that he threw. And I was expecting Val Venus to be more of the aggressor and more of the guy that was going to get started. He never even got out of the gates. It was a scenario where by the time he started throwing punches, they were counter punches that looked slow, because he was already stunned. And Bo was able to catch him and get him out of there pretty early. Overwhelmed him. I believe, I don't know if it was the moment in time plus the skill set, but Val just looked absolutely overwhelmed and he got steamrolled. And sometimes that happens. And we discussed it last week. We're discussing it now again, Jess. I'm still going to fall back on, I would not be surprised if Dana had a handshake deal with him beforehand and afterwards. This is, hey, listen, it's okay. This was a bad loss, but you'll be back. We'll have you back in 3 months, 4 months, whenever you think you're ready to come right back. We'll get you a fight. It'll probably be on one of these UFC fight nights, you know, home versus whoever on a Saturday at the Apex at 11 in the afternoon, but a fight's a fight. Hey, listen, payday's a payday. So, Jess, I can't remember what you tweeted verbatim, but it was something to the effect of Nickel needs to have a true step up in competition. And you thought a great step up in competition would be someone like Robert Whittaker. We'll talk about Whittaker's fight here in a moment, of course. Perhaps he's trending down because he came off of a knockout loss. I personally, in my opinion, I just think that's a little bit too much to swallow. I think a fight with Whittaker would be like a co-main event. I'm just not sure if he's ready for that yet. I think I personally think they're going to have him fight another, I don't want to say can, but a guy, again, that's a level, excuse my dogs now, that's a level or two below a Robert Whittaker. I just don't think he's ready for that. But time will tell. We'll see. Jess, indulge me here a little bit. Expand on that take, if you will.
So my thought behind this was everybody's on the Bo train, right? There's another WWE reference. Bo train.
Fair.
Now, everybody loves Bo. Everybody's talking about Bo. He's kind of everywhere. He's shown that he's got super solid jiu-jitsu and grappling skills. And now he's got a fight where he straight just knocked a dude plumb silly. And not just like Val Venus is a big dude. He's a big bulldog looking kid. He's got some power. He's got some pop. Bo said, nope, I'm going to take it all away. I'm going to steamroll you and I'm going to make this quick so I can move on, get paid and go on to my next fight. So now he's got all these things behind him. He's slowly building this slow build. It's been a slow build, but at some point in time, you have to hop up a little bit and start, you know, that build. And I think that coming off the loss to Duplessis, I think that Robert Whittaker, and if you look back on his last four or five fights, yes, he's fought all top competition. I get it. But he's got a negative record coming out of that. And now he's just lost to another top dog who's a young up-and-coming guy who I'm not sure if Robert Whittaker could beat in a second fight. If they fought again in 2 months, I don't think that Robert Whittaker wins that fight. So now what you do is you say, you know what? We strike while the iron's hot. You take Bo, you take Robert, you put him on a, you know, you put him on a main event on like a, you know, maybe a Saturday card. I don't know if you want to put him on a pay-per-view. Maybe you blow up a freebie card just to get some views. But you put them together. You have the guy who's, you know, making a name for himself. You have a guy who needs to get a win.
Trending up
badly.
Versus trending down in play.
Trending up versus trending down. You let him go. Two things happen here. Then it is a sure fact that he is a budding superstar in the UFC and deserves top competition and to move up even quicker after that. If Robert Whittaker wins, he's just beaten an emerging superstar and remains in the hunt for a potential next fight with a Duplessis or, you know, a Colby or somebody in that top five realm again. But as it looks right now, you got trending up versus trending down. And I love putting those fights together.
Jess, if I'm the UFC, I'm just afraid of another Paul Rosas situation. And I know that might be a bad comparison when you look at the skill sets and the ages, but I look at it more like you have a budding superstar that in a sport where you may not have a lot of budding superstars. So you may want to just take it easy. My dog is driving me nuts right now. I got this, you know, just this pup of mine that I've been talking to you about. I'm about to slap his ass in the cage. And I didn't call it a cage. You call it a crate, right? Isn't that the correct, politically correct thing to say?
You're going to have PETA after us and stuff, man.
I don't put my dog in a cage. I put him in a crate. And the fucking
there we
thing
go.
Is, and the thing is, takes up too much room in my living room, which tells you it's too fucking big as is. But, I just hate the idea of that Paul Rosas scenario here. And I think the UFC, they want to do a good job of protecting their blue chip guys and their guys that they think can be the next Israels or can be those type of stars. I do want to get into this Whittaker fight as well. But this second fight, to me, might have been the most intriguing fight of the night. And it was one of those scorecards went all over the place. Jalen the Burner Turner. Dan Hooker, Jess, give me some thoughts on this fight.
Jalen, he was my pick for this fight. You listened to the show last week. I picked Jalen Turner. I picked him on my scorecards when I tweeted that scorecard out. Jalen Turner misses weight, loses 20% of his purse. Dan says, hey, I still want to fight. Let's make this happen. It was a great stylistic fight. It was a great stylistic fight, but Jalen's already fucked me over a couple times here, right? So I'm already burned. Dan Hooker is a great stylistic fight, like fantastic. And those guys put on a banger of a fight. Like I'm telling you, that fight was so good from start to finish. Each guy took a couple rounds from each other. Like it literally came down to the last round and they just were just throwing the entire time. Dan Hooker got kicked so hard in the head, I thought that it was going to fall off, and somehow he managed to bounce right back and throw like a counter right. I'm like, what the hell is happening here, man? This is like a hurricane in here. That fight was so damn good. One of those fights I was just talking about at the beginning of the show that you just like, fuck, man, I got to go back and watch that fight again. Like, it was too good to not watch again. It ends up Jalen Turner loses a slim decision. Could have gone either way. I mean, I felt that both men, like, really put on a show. I had picked Turner for the basis of, like, he loves to throw the kicks, and you saw those happen. Hangman likes to get hit by things. He's almost like a Donald Cerrone, man. He'll just, like, kind of walk through stuff. And Hooker always ends up bloody at the end of his fights. He always looks like a mess. But, man, that guy, he's got that, like, fourth quarter, like, dang thing, man. Like, he knows it's crunch time, and he's got to go full blast. And that's what he did in that third round. He just went in there, and he did his thing, man. Like, he went in there, and he just threw everything at Turner. And Turner's gas tank, surprisingly, or maybe not surprisingly, since he couldn't make weight, gas tank slowed down severely in that last round. And that's when Hooker took advantage and ended up stealing that fight.
So, much like you, I scored the fight for Turner. I scored the first round for Turner. I thought it was close, but I thought Turner definitely won it with just the advantage with the striking. I scored the second round for Turner. I understand that last 30, 45 seconds, Hangman was really putting it on him, and he had him in that choke there with, I don't know, 3 seconds left, 1 second left. Maybe there's another 10 seconds in that round. He gets a stop right there. But I'm not going to take that 30 or 45 seconds away. And there wasn't enough damage done with what Turner was doing to him those first 4 minutes in that second round. And to piggyback off of what you just said, that fucking high kick was so hard. And Turner did the stanky leg. My man was dancing. You know what I'm saying? He was doing a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Turner threw it again maybe 30 seconds later, and he was very smart in blocking it. He reminded me with – he did, like, the Nogueira block where he had the really high arm. But, yeah.
Which is the blow that – because Hooker broke his arm. Is that the one that
had
it?
To be. That had to be. That had to be because Turner was kicking so fucking hard. But I agree with you where you could see – I don't even want to say the mental breakdown, but you could see him between that second and third round. And I think DC or Rogan or both were pointing out Turner looks a little cooked right now. He looks a little bit done. But he was still able to come out and battle and make it a competitive third round. The third round wasn't one side. It wasn't a 10-8 by any means. It was a competitive round where Hooker was just getting the best at him at that point. With the strikes. I mean, he was really laying it on him. And just an absolute fun fucking fight. There was some point somewhere in that middle of the second round where you have that moment as a fight fan where you realize, oh, I'm watching something special. I'm watching Henderson versus fucking Shogun. I'm watching, Fedor. I'm watching this type of fight that I know is going to be special. And it was. It was just a fucking great, stylistically, absolutely fun fight. We say it on the show all the time. When the rounds are that close, I cannot be mad at that decision. I just, not much like yourself, again, I scored it for Turner.
Yeah, I agree with the scoring. I thought that Turner did enough damage in the first. Definitely, he definitely won the first. Hooker tried to steal the second, but I don't think he did enough. That choke, I don't think was it wasn't anything that he was in danger of being choked out. And then going into the third, both men just kind of like bit down on the mouthpiece and just came in and said, "Hey, let's bang this out and see who comes out the winner."
This is my new Figgy versus Moreno. I just want to see these guys fight.
It was a great fight. Like, I'm telling you, like, I think that they should run it back. I mean, here's my theory on them running this back. It makes no sense really in reality because it doesn't really do anything for either one. But here's the thing: Turner did miss weight, so you know Hooker has nothing. He's not. Beating Turner in this fashion, I don't think moves him up a lot, and he definitely doesn't fall down. And I don't think Turner falls down a lot either, because Hooker, you know, has so many wins. He's such a bit. He's a name in the sport. Losing in that fashion definitely, I don't think, drops him much. So if neither man really moves the needle as far as like up or down in the rankings, let's just run this shit back.
Can we have a scenario where Turner wins the fight against maybe a top 10 guy, top, 7 to 10 guy, and then Hooker heals up and then Hooker comes back after a six-month layoff, however long it takes for his hand to get good. And look, Turner's right there, and he needs a fight. Let's do it.
It'd be fun to watch.
Comes right back. Whitaker, we spoke about him earlier, so he already gave the spoiler alert on this fight versus Duplass. This fight was fucking weird to me, Jess, because there were a lot of moments where I thought Whitaker was just the all-around better fighter. And then Duplass, who we have talked about on this show before, he kind of does that zombie fighter thing where he just kind of goes into like, I'm just going to absorb your punishment to give you mine. And give me some thoughts on this fight, Jess.
Caught my attention the most was the size of the two men. Same weight class. They got a weigh in at the same. But fuck, Duplessis looked huge. He looked like an animal. So USADA is going to be all over him for the next week. I'm telling you. He looked so bigger and thicker than Whitaker when they lined up right there in the cage. Like, you could just tell the difference right there. Whitaker's never been like this big. You know what I mean? But like, Duplessis was just so much bigger. It was crazy. Anyway, the fight was Whitaker's game plan was to come out, be the more technical striker. And again, like we talked about last week, he was going to attempt to throw more strikes to win rounds by throwing more strikes. If you throw a lot of strikes, the judging almost gets lost and they can't tell how many shots you've actually landed. And they just kind of score the round for you because you've thrown 300 punches in one round. Robert Whitaker does a lot of that. That's kind of what he attempted to do in the first round. They get past the first round, they go to the second, and then that's when Dricus just goes to his zombie walk mode, and he says, I can't just sit back and keep getting tagged. I have to do something now. So he goes zombie mode, walks straight through every throwing, and just throws big, heavy, thumping shots. Like, the shots to the body were hard shots. Jay, you talk about this a lot in past shows. People do not think about how hard it is and how bad it hurts to get hit in the body. And Whitaker was getting just smashed in the body. And then he had some other shots. Duplessis ended up getting some straights through. Whitaker, I think, was already damaged at that time. And I think, honestly, the body shots what took the biggest toll. And then that opens up a lot because Whitaker was trying to guard the body and lowers his hands enough for Duplessis to get those straights through. And Duplessis is a big, strong dude. Those shots landed flush. He hit him like 3-4 straight times, like right in the head, and dropped Whitaker and then finished him on the ground. Duplessis is a big, strong middleweight, and he's going to be very hard to deal with. Even for a guy like Izzy, it's going to be tough. But the thing that Izzy has that Robert doesn't is the length advantage. Robert just had to kind of stand there and throw as many punches back and forth as he could. Duplessis was able to walk through those a little bit easier. He's not going to be able to do that with Izzy.
I said this at some point during the Moreno-Pantoja fight. The progression of boxing in mixed martial arts is such more apparent in the body shots now. It felt like 10 years ago, the boxing was just headhunting, and the kicks, you'd see body kicks. Like, oh, that's a great body kick. But you never really saw. I felt like it was like the Diaz brothers were the only guys that punched people in the body. And then, and then at some point within the last 3 to 5 years, you start to see guys implement it more. And then you see a card like this where it's like, Hooker and Turner are just digging into the body. Duplass and Whitaker are just digging into the body. Moreno and Pantoja, they're just digging into the body. It was so
Volkanovski, same thing.
The boxing fan of me, just the combat sports fan of me that has been saying forever, man, if these guys just threw body hooks a little bit more. I know it's dangerous because it leaves you open for high kicks and it leaves you open. It's a different sport. But when guys are in that phone booth and they dig in those body shots, man, it's fucking beautiful, especially the lighter weights. But yes, you're right, Jess. Duplass bites down on that mouthpiece. He beats up your body. He just beats you up. He does that George Foreman thing. He'll punch you in the chest. He'll punch you in the arms. He don't give a fuck. He's just firing. He hits hard. And we are probably at the Whitaker trending down portion of his career. Which, I mean, when you're fighting Izzy and fucking who everyone all the top got Vettori, all the guys at the top of this division for the last
4 years.
Four years, I would say, easily the last 4 years. And he's dealt with injuries too. At some point you're gonna reach the top of the mountain and then you start coming down up from the mountain. You're trending down. I don't know if this is a Duplass trending up. As maybe it is. The UFC clearly wants it to be based off of them throwing Izzy right in that motherfucker. They got Whitaker out of there and threw fucking Izzy right in that motherfucker so he can start throwing in bombs. But Duplass is a tough, hard-nosed fighter. And we've been talking about him on this show for a while, Jess. When guys like this, these are just tough, kind of throwback. They remind me more of that Archie Moore.
He reminds me of a Guy Metzger.
No, I love that. Comparison. I love that comparison. But I'm trying to go more of just like a throwback combat sports guy that's just gritty and tough. And again, we're going to say it for the fourth or fifth time on the show, but the bite down on your mouthpiece guy. This guy isn't necessarily an athlete who learned how to fight. This guy is a fighter who happens to be an athlete as well. Like that, these are the guys at the gym that when you leave sparring and it hurts like hours later. Like these are the dudes. So interested in seeing what happens with him and Izzy. The night of, right after this fight happened, everybody was saying, Duplass is just he's just in there for another guy to fuck for Izzy to eat up. I don't know. I gotta see it. I gotta see him in the cage. I got to see Izzy with that chicken chest of his next to Duplass. And like you said, that wide size. I'm interested in seeing what happens there, Jess. I'm interested in seeing what they do next. Don't know if we should spend too much more time on this fight because we got the two championship fights. But
I feel like we covered the fight. Duplass is where he's at right now. He's deserving of. And Izzy has basically cleared out he's cleared out the division like once, maybe twice. Who knows? So you just gotta.
Yes. I don't mean to interrupt you. We said it last week. The best thing that could happen to the UFC is if Duplass wins this fight because they need somebody new for Izzy to fight.
Well, I for one thing want to see Robert Whittaker versus Izzy again. I just think it's a bad matchup for Whittaker. I love the Reaper. He's a fantastic guy. He's such a class act. The last thing I want to mention about this fight is this. I hate doing this, but it's been on my mind a lot, so I'm just going to speak my mind on the podcast. Robert Whittaker has been spending a lot of time off, healing up from other injuries and taking time off from his last fights, and he's been doing a lot of family stuff and just kind of chilling and doing a lot of nothing for the UFC, really. Just spend a lot of time in New Zealand with his family and friends and just chilling. This fight he did train for. I'm not going to say that he took time off from his training or anything, but like I don't believe that his head is fully in the fight game, especially coming off this long layoff and just spending so much time, free time with his family, hugging and loving on his kids and his woman and being into life, just relaxing.
Is it possible that he took Duplass a little lightly?
I don't even think. I just think that he's taking the fight game lightly. Like I don't mean that like 100%. But there's times, man, when you like you said, you climb that mountain and you're fighting the best of the best, three times a year, and all your fights are bangers. All of them are bangers, right? And then you start that climb down is when he was like, man, I got to take some time off. I got to heal some wounds. I got to heal up from this last loss. I got to, take a little time off for me. When you have that time off, if you're a young fighter, right, you're still hungry and you're just in the gym training every day, 2-3 hours a day. You're going to jiu-jitsu at night. You're going to wrestling camp on the weekends. You're spending that time training. I think Robert Whittaker at his age, he's like, nah, man, I want to spend time with my family, my friends. I want to have a little drink. I want to have a little food. I want to go hang out at the beach. And I think that his time off did him a little bit more damage on the fight side of things heading into this fight, which was a huge fight for him. And so, I don't want to say it's time for retirement or nothing like that, but I can definitely see Whittaker taking a little bit more time off.
I think that's fair. I think there's nothing wrong with that. The guy's got over 30 fights. So once you get, into that 30, 35, 40 fights.
So many fights.
You know what I mean? That's a lot of fights. Brandon Moreno versus Alexandre Pantoja. This was a banger. This was a fun fight. My scorecard was a little different from all the scorecards that varied across the intranets. Jesse, give me your scorecard. Give me your thoughts on this fight.
Scored the fight for Pantoja. I thought they, especially in that last round, the last two rounds, I felt like he had done a lot more damage. I think that Moreno, he started off slow. I think that it's hard to say that because both men were firing shots like the entire time. But I feel like Moreno, I believe that you said it either last week when we were talking about Brandon, is that he's kind of a slow starter. He kind of picks and chooses his spots. He's got a weird fight style when he's in the cage. It's typically exciting and it gets the job done. But then there's times when he takes a lot of damage for it. And that's what ended up. Toja landed so many big shots, and he just opened Moreno up so quick. And then you're dealing with cuts, you're dealing with bruises, bumps, and just, you know, just feeling like shit, getting hit over and over and over again through five rounds. I feel like Moreno's body gave up on him before his brain did.
You know, I had it 4-1, Pantoja. I thought the first round, Pantoja controlled him with the takedown at the end of the round, showed some great jiu-jitsu. I thought Moreno won the second round. That second round felt like the round at the end of it where you went, okay, now we got to fight. Now Moreno is awake. Now we might see Moreno really turn it up. In the third round, Pantoja started to look really tired. But he and I tweeted about this, he did that great thing, and it reminds me of Randy Couture, where I'm going to box when you're not ready to box. And I'm going to grapple when you're not ready to grapple. When you're ready to box, I'm going to take you down. And when you're looking for those takedowns, I'm going to fucking chop you up with my hands. Pantoja landed, like you mentioned, a lot of heavy shots, a lot of heavy lefts and right hands. He was not throwing a lot of jabs and a lot of body work. When they were getting inside, when they were getting in that phone booth, he was fucking beating Brandon's body up. Brandon as well was letting his hands go. He had some exchanges where he was at the head of them, but it just, those takedowns really were the difference in the fight to me. I 3, 4, and 5, I gave to Pantoja. I can't remember the round. I can't remember 4 being even that close. I felt like you said, Jess, I think he won 4 and 5 pretty easily. So maybe 3 was the round that was a little bit closer, but I remember specifically, it felt to me like, oh, that's a Pantoja round, that's a Pantoja round, that's a Pantoja round, and here we are.
I think I had Pantoja winning the first round. The takedown at the end of the round always is a good solidifier of stealing the rounds. It was a close competitive round, but that takedown at the end kind of was like, okay, I got to give it to Pantoja. I thought that Moreno came alive in the second. I think that he squeaked by in the third, then lost the fourth and the fifth drastically. Like, he was just getting hit a lot. And like I said, what I mean by his body gave up before his brain is like, his brain was like on fire. Like, hey man, this is what you got to do. This is what you got to do. But by then he'd already been beaten up so bad. Like, everything was coming off like a half a second slower than how it should have came off. And so every punch was a little bit slower. Every kick was a little bit slower. Every takedown attempt was a little bit slower. And Pantoja was just on top of things. That fourth and fifth round was a wash.
Pantoja was doing that amazing thing with the jiu-jitsu. And I know Figgy has next level jiu-jitsu as well, but he just looked better. Pantoja looked better. Where he'd get that anaconda body lock and it just looked tighter than all hell. And even if he wasn't getting those chokes, or even if they were hand fighting for chokes, it was more than anything that body lock with Moreno fighting to scramble to get back to his feet. Credit to Pantoja. I don't know if they do an immediate run it back. I'm not sure. I know our boy Raw Dog, shout out to Brandon Royval, is out there and he's waiting for a fight. So maybe he's next man up. We know this division has always been stacked. So I don't know if Brandon goes back of the line. He did have a winning scorecard in there. So maybe he argues, hey, look, these scorecards were kind of all over the place. I'm a fighting champion. I've always been a fighting champion. And I'm a UFC guy. So because of that, throw me a rematch, an instant rematch. I'm not sure, but I'll tell you what, Jess, any of those fights I'm here for. You want to run a rematch? Let's do it. You want to run Pantoja versus Raw Dog? That sounds fun as fuck. Let's do it. You want to run an eliminator, Raw Dog versus Moreno? Let's do it. Any of those fights I'm fucking here for.
The flyweight division is by far, in my opinion, the most fun and in the UFC. And then the featherweight division would be next. And then after that, you know, probably middleweight or welterweight division after that. I mean, the smaller weight classes just have such fun fighters. They're so talented. There's so much talent from top to bottom. Like, seriously, there could be a guy ranked number 17 right now who is just getting his training locked in. He's going to come up, win 3-4 wins, be in the top 10. Who knows? You know what I mean? Like, the division's stacked. And I'm a big fan of Raw Dog. I would love to see that fight against him and Pantoja. I think that'd be a hell of a fight. It'd be a fun banger fight. If you want, you know, let him heal up and do this again in 3-6 months, then let's do it. That's cool with me. This is just one of those divisions where you can just put this guy with that guy and this guy with that guy, and every fight's going to be awesome.
And it could shake out any way if they end up fighting a 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 5. Let's talk Volk. Speaking of guys nobody could beat, speaking of the exact opposite in that weight division, Yair Rodriguez, Volkanovski, Jesse, I believe you were all in on Yair Rodriguez. You went chips in the middle of the table. You were feeling fucking real froggy. I tried to talk you out of it, but not as much as I should have. Volk, I thought easy. Yeah. All right, so one of those scenarios again where you were on one side, I was on the other. I tried to talk you out of it here. Volk is just fucking absolutely steamrolling people. Yair versus Volk. Give me some thoughts on this fight, Jess.
I am so taken back. I'm ready to put Volk pound for pound number one. Put him above John Jones.
Seriously, how do you not?
John Jones is just a chunky heavyweight right now, man. Who cares, man? John Bones, you're done. You're done, man. You're number two, brother. You're number two. And he is on point. His training looked, he looks absolutely phenomenal. Dude's even an older cat. Like, let's not even pretend like he's a 25-year-old. Like, dude's an older cat. He's been fighting for a while. You know what I mean?
How is he in his prime in his 30s?
This man is defying. He is defying time right now. I win. Volkanovski's beating Father Time right now. That's how good this man is. Oh my gosh, he looks so good. His striking looks so good. His takedowns were so crisp. His ground game was good. Like,
his finish in the air was so beautiful. He was textbook.
The finish against the cage where you got like the pop against the cage, and then when Yair goes up, just the speed and quickness to drop down and grab that double leg and put him on
Matt
his back.
Hughes, Matt oh Hughes level takedown right there.
I am telling you, Volkanovski is nothing to – he's nothing to mess with, man. I love Yair. I've been a big Yair guy for a long time. I truly believe that this guy is going to stay at the top of this division. But there ain't nobody beating Volkanovski in this division until he decides to leave that division. That's just – it's a wrap, brother. It's a wrap. Call it. Send it. It's all good. It's over. It's done. I'm on the Volkanovski bandwagon from here on out. I'll never doubt this man ever again in my life. This man is pound for pound number one, best fighter in the world.
Yeah, the first round was a feel-out round, which we've seen out of Volk previously. I don't think there was anything wrong with him going, let me get used to Yair's length, because he's a lengthy cat.
Yeah.
Let me make sure that I don't let him kick my head off, which he attempted. And let me just kind of try and find my lane with my footwork, because he has incredible footwork. And at some point towards the end of that first round, you can see he was warming up. He was starting to put his hands out, put his kicks out, and just kind of do his thing. And then that second round is really where he turned it on, turned it up. He started really, really touching Yair. And Yair had no answers. Yair really had no fucking answers. Third round, quick and easy finish. At that point, I don't know if Yair was deer in headlights or just mentally like, holy shit, I was not ready for this guy.
He was overwhelmed. He was fucking overwhelmed. It was like fighting Mike Tyson. It was like Mike Tyson fight, right? Like, Tyson comes in, he just swarms you. He swamps you. It don't matter how good you came into that fight. At some point in time, you were lost. in the fog. The juice is loose, baby. Like, you have no answers. Your brain is fizzled, fried out. You have nothing left in your head. Your body's still trying to work because it's natural ability to do that. But your brain is lost. You don't know where you're at. Yair looked completely lost out there. He didn't know what to throw, how to block. He didn't know nothing. And I'm telling you, that finale against the cage, including the takedown, one of the smoothest transitions I've ever seen in my life.
It's all I want to talk about. I'm telling you, it's fucking a 2005 Matt Hughes. It's so beautiful. You never see a guy at this level in a championship fight, and Yair is not a slouch. That's kind of really where I want to plant my flag. Yair is not a slouch. To see him do Yair like that, to me, was like, oh, God, this is fucking impressive. And then for after that, him to go, yeah, this division's cool, but you know the fight I really want? I want fucking Islam again. That's the fucking fight. Like, yeah, you're right. That is the fight to make. That fight was close. I thought you won that fight. Dude, I think he won that fight. I gotta go back and listen to the fucking show we did.
No, we both. I believe that we both said that Volk beat.
I gotta go back and watch. I think I scored it 3-2. That was another razor thin close fight. Yeah, I think there was the moment where Islam couldn't do anything but take Volk down. Right, that's all he could do was just be a bigger dude. That's how that fight ended. If I remember right, I gotta go back and watch it, but. Dude, Volk is like inspiring to clean out that division and go, yeah, I want to fight the dude that just beat me because that to me is the challenge that's out there. That's fucking
And here's
inspiring.
the other that I am impressed with is just his professionalism that he brings. Like, he doesn't talk shit. He's not like the in your face guy. Like, he's kind of a quiet guy. Like, he talks enough. He answers all the interview questions. He's very polite. He's very, you know, very upfront, just like kind of, you know, he's just there. After the fight, he grabbed Yair and was like, he told Yair straight up. He was like, bro, like, I had to train super hard for this fight. I knew that you ain't, you know, you were nothing to take lightly. I trained harder for this fight than I have for like probably any other fight. Like, he's such a professional, man. And just respect all the way around, like to his opponents and to the fans. Volkanovski, he is somebody that you can literally just look at and be like, damn, like, I want to be like that guy.
All right, Jess, we're going to do 1 minute on this, and then we're going to seamlessly transition into Wembyama, if you will. There is a UFC card this weekend. We don't care about it. We've texted about it. We've talked about it on the pre-show. We don't have much interest in it. Usually when this happens, this is great news for combat sports fans because these are usually really exciting cards that we end up texting each other about and going, damn, that ended up being really good. We shouldn't have talked shit about it. So this might be a great thing for you combat sports fans, for me and Jesse to just completely cruise right past this, Jess. Bueno Silva's fighting Holly Holm. We were more surprised than anything that Holly Holm is still fighting. Holly Holm is a slight underdog, I believe, Jess. You got any thoughts on this fight?
She's actually a slight favorite.
Okay, the minus 145.
The needle favorite. Holly Holm versus Myra Bueno Silva. First of all, Bueno Silva, no slouch. She's kickboxer. She's an attack specialist. She's going to go at Holly Holm. She's not afraid to throw strikes. Matter of fact, that's her forte. She's going to come after her. She's the younger, stronger fighter. I'm going to take her in this fight over Holly Holm. I'm not saying that Holly Holm can't win because she's still got strikes. She's still a world-class kickboxer in her own right. I don't want to take anything away from her skills. But as we've said and mentioned already several times in this, every other podcast that we do when we talk about fighting, Father Time is a bitch. And Father Time is slowly catching up to Holly. Without like what she had a slight win the last time she fought. And, you know, she came out and kind of was like, oh, I'm ready to go for another run. I want another title shot. I think it's cool that she wants that. I think that every former champion wants that. But once Father Time is hit, it's over. It's a wrap. Holly Holm can beat the smaller folks But I'm telling you, Mayra Bueno Silva is no one to take lightly. I think that she takes Holly Holm's head off. I'm going to go TKO round one.
Shout out Holly for being able to be the definition of a gatekeeper since knocking out Ronda in 2015. Yes, dude. And I wanted to make sure I brought that up for a reason. Lost to Misha, lost to Valentina, lost to DeRamadine, lost to Cyborg, lost to Nunes, lost to Caitlin Vieira. She just really is the queen of gatekeeping right now. And hey, listen, good for her for still getting these paydays. Whenever I think of Holly, I just think about that video of her boxing from like 15 years ago and just getting absolutely knocked the fuck out in like a bingo hall in the middle of Texas, probably somewhere close to where
I've forgotten about that video. Thank you for reminding me.
Oh, it's a fun watch if you like violence. And you, Jess, give me 1 minute here, please. I just want to talk about Wemby before we get out of here. I was fortunate enough to watch some of this game one. I believe it was Friday night. I was able to watch all of his mixtape highlights from last night. And here is my synopsis. Are you ready?
Let's hear it.
He's going to be all right. I'm not ready to crown him and say he's going to be the next Tim Duncan or the next LeBron. But I'm also not going to do the other side of the Richter scale and say he's fucking French Sean Bradley or anything like that. Like, he shows spots on defense where you can see he's good. He's lengthy. It's my second time using lengthy today. And he also, he's good around the basket, which you would expect from a guy that size. And then you also can see spots where he can get beat up physically. You can see spots where he's flat-footed and he might be athletic, but not as athletic as a dude that's about 7-8 inches shorter than him and a little faster, and they can get around him. And I think offensively, he'll be good in spots. There were spots I looked at, Jess, where I was like, oh, he shoots like KD. And there were spots where I saw him on a putback dunk, and I was like, that's a fucking Manute Bol right there, where you don't necessarily need to have all the strength in the world. You just got to have a good eye, know where that ball is coming off the rim, and you're just taller and lengthier, third time, lengthier than everybody. And you can just – it's not a pretty C-Web putback dunk. As much as you say, well, there's fucking 2 points and an offensive rebound. Put that in the stat column for him. He's going to be okay, Jess. I think he's going to be okay. I know it's early. I know we're definitely not using this as the gauge for the next 82 games where he's playing grown man basketball. Realistically, he's playing against a lot of guys he won't be playing with. Some of these guys will be going to the G League. Some of these guys will be going overseas. There's probably two or three guys that will be on the roster with the Spurs, and they're going to be 7, 8, 9 guys. You know what I mean? They're not going to be starters. So with all that said, I think he did okay. I think it's one of those we shake the 8-ball and it says, hey, Z, come back later.
I'll agree with you basically on all those points. I thought that he looked okay. I think that in spots he can look great, but not in every spot. I think that if Pops was smart, and I know that he is, obviously, multi-time winning, a championship winning coach, he's going to use Wemby in spots. He's not gonna, I don't expect Wembanyama to play every minute of every game. He's gonna be a spot guy. I think that in certain areas you're gonna want him out on the court. Probably. And then on some areas, I think you're going to want to play a different guy. And luckily for Pops, he has multiple big men on that bench that can come in and they can flip-flop back and forth. Speaking specifically about Wemby, I will say that his future is, he's probably going to be a multi-time defensive player of the year because he's going to get a shit ton of blocks. Like, that's just – I think that that's where it's at. Like, he around the rim, it's going to be tough to drive on him or to get shots up over him. He's going to block a lot of shots every game. Maybe he may even average 4 to 5 blocks a game. I mean, he's going to get his hand on the ball like that. Around the rim, the thing that worries me is that He's frail, man. He's frail. He don't have enough muscle and body strength to just push. I know he's got time. I know. But as of right now, from what I've seen, a matter of fact, our boy B-Rod,
yes,
he tweeted me and goes, do you think that Brandon Miller is going to be a better player than Wembanyama?
Ooh.
And I said, I don't think better is the word. I think that Brandon Miller is more NBA ready.
Mm-hmm.
Physically,
of course,
he played collegiately, so he's been playing against NBA athletes for a good couple years. He probably played against NBA athletes in high school, you know, guys like Brandon Miller probably played at prep schools and stuff, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So he's more NBA ready than Wimby is right now. Wimby's gonna take some time, but best case scenario happened. He didn't go to the Sixers. He didn't go to the Hawks. He didn't go to the Magic. He didn't go to, you know, he went to the motherfucking Spurs that are head coached by a future first ballot Hall of Fame head coach and Greg Popovich. He's going to use him the proper way. He's going to take him out when he needs to be out. The only thing that will derail Wimby is injuries. Because he is frail. And I'll be honest, man, some guys like that are not built to put weight on. Look at Kevin. Kevin Garnett was a skinny guy his whole entire career. But what Garnett had was that tenacity, you know what I mean? Like, he had that fire. Wimby don't show no fire. I haven't seen no fire from him. Yeah, he had that really cool putback slam. That's great, man. That's a great
point.
You know what I mean?
But he's young.
He is young, and he can develop. And I think, again, I'm going to go back to this every single time we talk about Wimby for the next couple of years at least. He is being coached by one of the greatest coaches of all time. Greg Popovich will mold him to the best of his ability. And if he can't, then Pops will unload him at some point in time. But I think that Wimby definitely has a good ceiling. I don't think it's like – I don't think Wimby's averaging 25, 12, and, you know, five blocks a game. I think his ceiling is probably 14, 14 and a half, you know, 9, 10 boards a game. He doesn't even show really a tenacity around the board for rebounds, which worries me. So, I mean, he may even average like 8 to 9. I'm saying 10 rebounds is like a tops. Like, I don't think he's averaging, you know, 12, 15 boards a game. Then as far as the defensive side of things, it's just going to be the blocks. He's not going to get a lot of steals. And under the basket,
he's going to disrupt a lot of shots.
He's going to disrupt shots.
One of those stats that isn't kept, but he's going to disrupt a lot of shots. He's going to disrupt a lot of plays.
Great point. The other thing that he's going to have to work on is his ball handling skills. He's so damn tall. He doesn't crouch way down low when he's dribbling. He kind of keeps the ball mid-level. Well,
because he wants to show off his dribble.
Mid-level is like 6 feet tall, man. These guys are coming in swiping a lot of balls out of his hands right now. But again, he's being coached by Greg Popovich. Popovich will mold him to the best of his ability. I don't think that he's going to be a bad player. He's going to be in the league for a long time. He's going to be better than average. I don't expect him to go to like every single All-Star game for the next 10 years. I don't expect him to win MVPs, but I do expect him to be Defensive Player of the Year multiple times. I expect him to be on all defensive teams many, many, many times. And he's going to be a co-conspirator on that Spurs team for quite some time.
Shout out my pup who disrupted my Evan flow twice.
What a good puppy. Podcast.
Pickles, you son of a gun. He's now in her crate. Jess, hit the shout outs. Let's get out of here.
We did a bunch of shout outs at the beginning, so I'm just going to go to the main. Thank you to Variety Sports for constantly doing the retweets and shout outs on Twitter. Thank you very much. Shout out to all the people that do retweets and everybody who listens to the show. We appreciate you very much. Variety at Variety_Sports_. Please go follow them. And then anybody attached to the VSN network, you can follow them because they have so many great podcasts,
great stuff,
including ours. So go and listen.
If we're not covering it, they are.
Exactly. 100% true. Other than that, folks, hope you had a great week. Hope you enjoy the rest of this one. We're out.
Peace, guys.